The Big Story from the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Reopening Singapore's borders in a safe and controlled way, two experts give us their take on when and how it can be done.
Welcome to The Big Story. I'm Olivia Kui.
And I'm Haryanto Diman. Now you can subscribe to the Straits Times channel so you never have to miss a single episode. Now, in the last 3 months, we've seen Singapore gradually reopening its borders, but that increases the risk of infections creeping into the community.
That's right. So let's recap the different travel arrangements Singapore has with other countries. On our end, general travel to Brunei and New Zealand has been allowed from this month, but people here cannot travel to either country until restrictions are lifted over there. Singapore is allowing visitors from these two countries as well. They don't have to self-isolate for 14 days upon arrival if they had remained in the two countries for 14 straight days prior to their visit to Singapore.
We also have bilateral green lane arrangements with 5 countries: Japan, China, South Korea, Malaysia and Brunei.
And Singapore is in discussions with places including Indonesia, Thailand, Hong Kong and Australia.
Let's now bring in Professors Teo Yu Ying and Dale Fisher. Now, Prof Teo is the Dean of the Saw Swee Hock School of Public Health at the National University of Singapore.
And Professor Fisher is a Senior Infectious Diseases Expert at National University Hospital. So, while Singapore's imported and community cases have remained low, we're seeing a resurgence in many other countries, currently in Europe in particular. So, given this contrast, should we further relax our restrictions on outbound and inbound travel? Professor Teo, why don't you start us off?
I think it's important to highlight that there is no uniform policy on travel, and we have to consider the different tiers of restriction based on which countries we're talking about. Generally, I can think about performing a risk assessment on the basis of two aspects. The first, it's really the degree of community spread in a country that should be preferably low, provided, of course, local authorities are able to get a good sense on the present extent of community spread in the country and not be under-reporting or outrightly missing any segments in the population. And of course, second is having the necessary public health measures to track, trace, test, isolate cases quickly. And I think based on this criteria, some countries will clearly fall into the category of not allowing any inbound travel, whereas we would see some other countries falling into categories that may allow some degree of restricted travel, perhaps for essential business travel, and others actually will be classified as mass market tourism even. And at the end of the day, it's about the chance that the rules we have in place for a country, whether they are able to stop an infected person from slipping through. And for a country where the situation is well under control, we really can afford to be a bit more relaxed and have actually the chance of missing someone coming in to be infected to be very low chance. Whereas for a country where the outbreak is widespread, we want to minimize incoming traffic as widely as possible.
Right. Well, Professor Fisher, where do you stand on this issue? Do you think it's time that we relax our restrictions?
Yeah, as YY just mentioned, it's all countries are different. And your question spoke about Europe, and that's not really the benchmark we should be talking about, I think. There was a nice article from Clara on a sort of a traffic light system of red and orange and green. And there's plenty of potentially green countries around. There's some with no recent transmissions, places like Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, even China, Taiwan. These are all, they haven't reported cases for many months in most cases. Then there's others with quite good control. They know where their cases are. These are South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, Malaysia. They've all had recent surges, but they've been able to bring their case numbers down just with some nuanced restrictions. The point is they've known where their cases are, and they've been able to contact trace effectively, do some selective changes such as in nightclubs and coffee shops, and they've been able to bring their numbers down quite sharply. This is not what you see in many other places in the world, such as Philippines is still having problems, the Indian subcontinent, Indonesia, and as we mentioned, Europe and the US. So I think we need to look at different countries differently.
Right. Now, according to coronavirus analyst Thomas Puyo, fences are necessary to control the virus, and if they are enforced, they'll be effective. How does Singapore's fencing measures stack up against the standards that Mr. Puyo mentioned? Prof Fisher, what do you think?
Singapore is in my view, leading the way in the sort of nuancing of these border restrictions. I think it's wrong to just bring in blunt, everybody must have 14 days quarantine like that. There are significant social and economic costs. This is not a zero-sum game, let's just make sure and not let anyone in. This is, I think, too simplistic. Border closures, and just like lockdowns, really, they're a moment when you've bought some time, you can get your systems in place. And as we've seen in most of the Asian countries, many that I've just mentioned, most of them have got control of their outbreaks. They know where their cases are. So I would like to see border controls not be used so bluntly and have, as I mentioned, a sort of a green, orange and red system.
Right. Prof Teo, what do you think about that? Are there any weaklings in terms of, you know, our fences?
At the moment, actually, I think as what Dale has mentioned, Singapore has taken a very nuanced approach towards addressing importation risk. And of course, we have learned this the hard way, because back in March, we allowed some of our returning travelers to spend the 14 days quarantine effectively, but at home. And that was what has resulted in some degree of community spread, which I would say that we are still trying to recover from it. So we are taking a cautious approach. And I think when we talk about the fences, it's very important to also talk about whether the country has that commitment to implement and to enforce some of these fences in a very sensible way. If we are requiring people to spend a 14 days period of quarantine, but they get to spend it at home, even if they're returning from some of the worst hit countries, we have to decide whether that is actually prudent. And of course, when Thomas talked about the fences, I think there is also a need to understand the context of some country setting, whether it is possible to have the same degree of fencing in every country, because there will be different ability to execute some of the fences that we talk about. Just even talking about quarantining people in the government-dedicated facility. Singapore has managed to do that, but I don't think many other countries will have the ability to do so when they are faced with large number of people coming into the country all the time.
Now, great insights from the both of you, and a pleasure to speak with the both of you, of course. We were joined by Professor Teo Yik Ying, Dean of the Saw Swee Hock School of Public Health at NUS, and Professor Dale Fisher, Senior Infectious Diseases Expert at NUH.